I'm always aghast about the lack of history being taught, the lack of variety of history. Even from when I was a child, I talked to my mother-in-law when she taught school, you know, all those years ago. She can see how things have changed. And if we don't know history, how do we know ourselves? How do we know where we come from? How do we know perspective? William Federer is one of the best out there, I think. Most interesting, most engaging. AmericanMinute.com. His website is fantastic. Every day, a little history blurb, a little something you probably didn't know, or if you knew about it, you know, in a different aspect of it. Just very fascinating if you're interested in history at all, or for your children, certainly very thought-provoking for them. AmericanMinute.com has written many books. The book that we're discussing is, it's a long title. I want to get it right. The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped. Very interesting title, of course, with Thanksgiving. We're giving some background how we got to Thanksgiving. We're talking about Squanto. But before we do, William mentioned impeachment. And since, you know, it's on everybody's mind, what's going on, give us a little bit of the historical precedence on what we're seeing on the impeachment. It seems unprecedented to me what's going on.
Right. Well, the basic thing we're experiencing is called psychological projection. Psychological projection. Sigmund Freud coined the term. He's a psychologist. It's where rude and hateful people call everyone they don't like rude and hateful. We've all met someone like that, right? And it's what little kids do. You know, I'm not the mean one. You're the mean one. You know, it's like you accuse your opponent of what you're guilty of. And so it's worked its way into politics. And so David Axelrod was the campaign manager for the previous president, and he said on NPR radio, April 2010, David Axelrod said, in Chicago politics, we have a tradition where you throw a brick through your own campaign office window and then call a press conference to accuse your opponent of having done it, right? And so this idea of Karl Marx says, accuse others of what you do. And so it's worked its way in. So if there's a candidate that maybe is colluding with the Russians, giving away a fifth of the U.S. uranium in exchange for a $145 million contribution to her foundation, then she wants to accuse her opponent of colluding with the Russians. It's playing defense by playing offense. And then the opponent has to bend over backwards, show they're not guilty, and if it ever comes back around to you, by this time the water is muddied and the public doesn't know who is telling the truth, and you get a pass. And so if there's a candidate that's extorting the Ukrainians, saying, we're going to withhold U.S. money unless you drop the investigation of my son. Well, then you want to accuse your opponent of calling the Ukrainians and threatening to withhold. You accuse them of exactly what you're doing wrong. And then the investigation process is designed to uncover and destroy all the evidence that can convict you. You destroy hard drives, laptops, emails, text messages, right? And so this is what we're experiencing. It's psychological. It's where so you'll have rude and hateful groups that will call nice, wholesome people rude and hateful because you're not embracing their agenda. And so they're the hateful ones. They'll even put up a website and they'll list everyone that they hate. And then the nice Christian people will just keep bending over backwards saying, no, really, I don't really. And you just keep backing up until they finally get you to bend over backwards and they get to pass their agenda. It's like a bully on a playground pushing everybody around. And if one kid stands up and a fight breaks out, the bully says to the teacher, he started it.
That's what we're
experiencing right now.
It's almost like at the end, you know, to continue with your analogy, you know, you keep backing up. No, I didn't do it. No, I didn't do it. They keep pushing. But finally at the end, they go, okay, I guess you didn't do it. Let's just forget about all this. Let's just forget about talking about Russia or collusion or whatever. Let's just forget it.
Yeah. And then they get a pass for the crime that they did. And,
what about the impeachment itself? What about the technicality, the legal, I guess, procedure, for lack of a better word, the actual procedure of this quote-unquote impeachment hearing seems very unusual to me. And it seems ridiculous, but it seems unusual, the procedures that are happening.
Right. Well, what the Democrats are doing is McCarthyism, right? They're doing secret hearings against people that are innocent. But their goal is, they don't have a candidate to run for president. New York Times They don't have front page articles. I mean, we're a year away from the election. And the last election cycle, they had their candidates on the front page every day. They don't have any candidates. They're embarrassed of their candidates. If there is anything on, you know, Bernie Sanders or Warren or whatever, it's like on the back pages of the New York Times. They know they do not have a candidate. So the only alternative is to try to destroy your opponent's candidate. I ran for Congress three times. They do polling. There's three things: your name, ID, how many people have heard your name, and then your positives and your negatives. So, for example, if you run against the candidate, everybody knows his name. He has no room to increase his voter base. And then if his negatives are really high and everybody knows his name, they've already formed their opinions, it's really hard for him to switch it to make himself a positive in the people's eye. So what you're left with is destroying your opponent. And it's gotten to the place they call it politics of personal destruction. You want to not just defeat your candidate, you want to destroy their reputation, destroy their family. They have a person on the campaign staff whose job is called opposition research. All they do is try to dig up dirt on the opponent. Well, Nancy Pelosi put into place a House Ethics Committee the last time she was the speaker, and staff full of Democrat lawyers. All they do is full-time opposition research on all the sitting Republican congressmen. They're using the power of the intelligence community to dig up dirt. That's why you have 50, and it doesn't have to be anything you did wrong. It just has to be something that can appear wrong, and you don't have the time and money to clear your name. And so that's why you have 50 Republican congressmen say, okay, forget it. I'm not going to even seek re-election.
I mean, it seems like a third world dictatorship or a communist takeover. Am I delusional?
Right. So I wrote a book called Who is the King in America? And the basic, it's, you know, I mentioned it top down, bottom up. So for most of world's history, you have kings. I went back to the beginning of the invention of writing, Sumerian cuneiform on clay tablets in the Mesopotamian Valley. Today, that's Iraq. And the most common form of government is Nimrods, Pharaohs, Caesars, Kaisers, Sultans, Tsars. Power wants to concentrate into the hands of one person. And it's in the human DNA, goes back to the fall in the garden, Cain, Kill, and Abel. So you put some babies in a playpen, one takes the rattle from the others. You put some kids on a playground, one's the bully, hogging the ball. You put some junior high girls in a clique, and one of them is the diva. You put some natives in the woods, one of them is the Indian chief. You put them in an inner city, one of them is a gang leader. And all a king is a glorified gang leader. It's a pyramid structure to society. If you are friends with the king, you are more equal. If you are not friends with the king, you are less equal. And if you're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason. Or you're a slave. And so it keeps repeating itself all around the world. I tell people, imagine if you were the king. That'd be pretty nice. And then you have a sister you really love. She has a kid. Now he's a teenager. He's hanging around the wrong type. He's drinking and partying. He hits someone with a car and kills him. And now he's facing manslaughter charges, mandatory prison time. And your sister comes begging to you and says, you're not going to let my little Johnny get locked away, are you? Wasn't his fault. Those other kids talked him into it, blah, blah, blah. What are you going to say to your sister? Well, I'll let little Johnny off the hook this time, but don't let it happen again. Guess what? As soon as you say that, you are the corrupt dictator. You just sent ripples through your kingdom that if your family or friends are the king, you get special treatment. You're not family and friends. You don't get it. And if someone wants to point out your favoritism, you're going to be tempted to want to shut them up. And so it just happens. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So what's the opposite? Well, God comes down of the Tower of Babel and confuses the languages and the people scatter. So you see, I have people when I speak hold up a fist in one hand, say concentrated power, fingers apart with the other hand, say separated power, then back to the fist, concentrated power. That's world history. Most of world history, power is in the hands of the Caesars, Pharaohs, Tsars. Very rarely is it separated into the hands of the people. But in times of crises, people let go of their freedoms and the rubber band snaps back into the hands of the king. And so you actually have philosophers like Machiavelli and Hegel and Karl Marx and Saul Alinsky that talk about intentionally creating domestic crises so that people will feel insecure, so they'll let the government usurp power and go back to the king. That's a whole another talk I do in a book called Rise of the Tyrant. But anyway, so you see that you mentioned gang style of behavior that's going on right now. What we're witnessing is the pivot point. It's like one of those, you know, things you sit on in a pool that's slippery and you're trying to stay on top, but all of a sudden it flips and you go under. It's like we're at this point where it's about to flip and we're barely hanging on to it. But it wants to flip back into the typical form of government, which is a gang style of government. If you're friends with the gang leader, you're more equal. You're not friends with the gang leader, you're less equal. You're an enemy of the gang leader, you're dead. Islam operates this way, right? If you're loyal and faithful to the ummah, the community, the group, you get emotional support. If you want to leave it, they'll threaten you and target you and even kill you. And so this dynamic, one of my talks, I give the difference between individual and group. Western civilization, Judeo-Christian values is summed up in one word, individual. You have rights because the creator gave them to you. And if there is no creator, well, then you get your rights from a group. And what the group gives, the group can take away. And that's when people, there's such a strong human desire to be accepted by a group. Little kids, you know, social community, social media, you know, Asia, they call it honor shame cultures where,
let me interject here because you said something that is very profound. I think that we're on a pivot point. I've been in a pool on that noodle or pool noodle or whatever, trying to balance and trying to, and slipping down. I can get that. What you're saying is we're at a crossroads, we're at a very delicate and dangerous point that this whole thing, the American experiment, what our founding fathers inherited or gave us as an inheritance, can basically go away really quickly if we don't pay attention here. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You can picture a spectrum of power. One side's total government, the other side is no government. Total government, you get a king, he rules through fear. You do what he says or he kills you. The no government side, it's anarchy, no government, unless each person is taught the law. It's like everybody downloads a behavioral app for their iPhone. Instead of a GPS app telling you where to turn, it tells you how to act in real time. Don't steal that. Be nice to that person, right? Don't lose your temper. And the Levites in ancient Israel were the computer geeks that helped the Israelites to download this app, right? And I go to the Google Play App Store, you know, line upon line, precept upon precept, press this button here, right, install here. And so the Levites helped the Israelites to download this behavioral app. And so each citizen in Israel knew the law. But then the big question is, why would you follow it? What would motivate you to follow an internal moral? Well, you know, Israel had the key ingredient. There is a God who is watching everyone. He wants you to be fair, and he's going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal. Nobody's around. You know you can get away with it. And then you think, well, God is watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. Everybody in the country really believes this. Excuse me. You can maintain complete order with no police. And so that's what ancient Israel had, and that's what these pastors in New England set up for their congregational form of government, and that became the basis for our U.S. Constitution. So when we say it's one nation under God, it's more than just a nice acknowledgement. It's the acknowledgement of God, the fear of God, the awareness of God that motivates people to do the self-government.
Well, let me ask you this. I talked about this yesterday quite extensively. Our fathers, our founding fathers, our framers, whatever you want to call them, they had a religion in mind for America. It wasn't going to be Protestant or whatever, but a general overarching morality and a basic, hey, there is a creator. We're responsible to the creator. Our soul's immortal. We're going to be judged, and we're responsible to each other. That's the basic religion of America. That's what I would argue. That's what I would say. And that was important. They knew that had to be taught. Morality had to be taught because that's the only way virtue could be exercised, because if you don't have virtue in your actions, then liberty becomes chaos. So virtue and liberty are inseparably connected and must be linked at all times. And our founders understood this exactly. Would you agree with that or disagree, or what's your comment on that?
Oh, great insight. I view it as a teeter-totter. The more internal restraints the populace has, the less external restraints they need. Get rid of the internal restraints. People are going to give into their passions and lusts. It's going to turn into chaos. And then everyone says, we need more external restraints. We need more policemen. We need more metal detectors. We need more, you know, take away our guns. You know, there needs to be more external controls. So either internal or external. I tell it's like a parent gives the teenager the car keys and says, look, you're a good kid. You can drive around and come home whenever because I know you're going to do what's right. But if you don't do what's right, again, hang around the wrong kids, drink and drive, you're going to be pulled over by the police and controlled behind bars. So, teenager, you are going to be controlled, either voluntarily from the inside or forcibly from the outside. It's the same way with a country. We're either going to be voluntarily controlled with internal morals, we're accountable to God, or we're going to teach the kids, give in to your passions and lusts. There's no right, there's no wrong, there's no absolutes. You can feel like a girl today, a boy tomorrow. You can kill the baby in the womb. There's no value for human life. You're an accident from evolution. So these kids decide, hey, you know, I decide I want to kill my classmate. Who can tell me it's wrong? And they do, and they kill it, and it turns into lawlessness and chaos. And then we say, government, you got to step in to restore order. And the government says, okay, we're going to take away your guns, take away your freedom of speech so you can't say something that offends somebody, so they do something about it. And yeah, they'll restore order, but when the dust settles, you'll have transitioned from the people ruling themselves bottom up back to a king ruling from the top down.
Okay, what you just said, that is extremely profound, especially for where we are right now. What I take away, and I'm listening, if I'm sitting at home and we're looking at the public school system, the government school system, and they teach situational morality. They teach secular humanism. That is the religion of public schools. And the idea of taking away history, or history is situational also. So what was good, there are no eternal truths. What was good for the founding fathers isn't necessarily good for us. We need a new law, something new for the 21st century, a new morality. It's all situational. What you just told me is that by doing that, by allowing and handing over the minds of hearts and minds of our children over to that philosophy, you are guaranteeing chaos. You are guaranteeing the destruction of everything that is American. That's what you just told me.
Yeah, and it's not a new thing. Machiavelli talked about doing this. So 500 years ago, Italy was not Italy. It was a bunch of city-states, Venice, Genoa, Naples, Florence, Siena, and they all had armies and fought. And Machiavelli thought if one prince could control all of Italy, it would stop the infighting. So he writes a book called The Prince, where he advocates the ends justifies the means. The end of one prince controlling all of Italy is such a good end, because it'll stop this infighting, that any means necessary to get there is justified. Lie, cheat, steal. So if a prince wants to conquer a city, the people would hate him. But if the prince pays criminals to kill cows, burn barns, smash windows, set things on fire, the people will cry out for help. The prince will come in and kill the very criminals he bribed to create the crimes. No one would know the better for it, and everyone would praise the prince as a hero. So it's good marketing. You create the need and fill it. You go around the back of the house and set it on fire, and then you go around the front of the house and sell them a fire extinguisher, and they'll pay anything for it and even thank you for being there. So it's called Machiavellianism, where you create or capitalize on crisis to consolidate control. The British did this, right? They came into Bengal and India, and they would give guns to one kingdom, give guns to another kingdom, stir up ancient animosity so they'd fight each other, and then the British would come in to restore order and take away everybody's guns, and they'd conquer both. And then they would do it again and again and again till they took over India, a quarter of the world's population. It was controlled by, you know, by Britain. And they tried doing it in America. They would go to the American Indians and give them guns and incite them to scalp along our frontiers. But this idea was adopted by the KGB and, believe it or not, even the CIA. So
Eisenhower, after World War II. Oh, I believe it, William. Go ahead.
After World War II, Iran had a leader named Mossadegh. And he was leaning toward the Soviet Union. So Eisenhower approved the first CIA Operation Ajax to overthrow a country's leader. And our CIA guys go over there, find people with grievances, stir them up, arm them. It creates domestic crisis. And in the confusion, Mossadegh gets thrown out, and we help install the Shah. And the Shah loved America. But these concepts goes all the way back to Plato, where in you want to sow division, and then people feel insecure. And then they surrender their freedom. You know, I tell people, it goes back to the beginning of time, you got Cain was was a tiller of the soil. So the first invention ever was a plow. And then people started hitting each other with it. They turned into weapons. And people felt insecure, so they would gravitate together for protection. And when you get people together, someone is a little better at knowing how to fight than the rest. And everyone says, you be our captain. And he organizes you, you fight, you win. That's a good thing. But then this captain has kids and grandkids who claim to be an elite class. My family is extra special, and it becomes this political machine in town, becomes a, you know, a mob boss, a gang leader. He becomes a king. And everybody in the town has to kiss up to this guy. And if you don't, you're ostracized and kicked out. And so it's this, in times of insecurity, people surrender their freedoms. And so this is the thought of, let's create insecurity. And so that's what this concept is. Anyway.
We got but that's fascinating. We got about a minute before the break. One more segment on the other side. What is the most important thing that we need to know right now in 30 seconds or less in America that we need to do to uphold, to hold on to the Declaration of Independence?
Knowing the history is so important. There's a communist tactic called deconstruction, where you intentionally separate people from their past, get them into a neutral where they do not remember where they came from, and then you brainwash them into the future you have planned for them. Sort of like a gene therapy for a culture. You take out the old identity and you put in the new. And so we see that they go into the classrooms and they tell the kids negative things about the founding fathers, so the kids will emotionally separate from them. Oh, they're all bad. And then you get the kids into the neutral, they're open-minded, and then you can give them your pitch for socialism or LGBT or Islam. And so this three-step process, you know, it's like a train car. You detach, you're unattached, and then you reattach. And so that they want to, whenever you see all these shows or these, you know, the tear down statues or, you know, try to malign every single founding father, say, well, they're all bad. But, you know, it really doesn't matter if they're bad or not. They gave us a present, and that present is we get to be in charge of our life.
You.
We don't have
thank
a king.
You. Doesn't matter. That's what I say about Thomas Jefferson. I don't care if he ran naked every full moon down Main Street. I don't care. What do I care? He wrote the Declaration of Independence. My gosh. Yes or no, is that the greatest political document we've seen in thousands of years?
Right, yeah, because it
okay.
says rights right. come from a creator.
That's right. Here we go.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Kirkman by calling 877-817-9829 or order at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com. As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics?
Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
Welcome back to the Power Hour. We are talking to William Federer. Just take a moment to give you the specials over the Power Mall. ThePowerMall.com. ThePowerMall.com. 877-817-9829. That's how we're supported. Buy from the good guys. That's what Joyce always says. That's a great slogan. There's a different. Don't buy an. You want to support Jeff Bezos? You want to support Amazon? Then that's what you do. And you may, who knows, you may even buy some Chinese counterfeit that doesn't even help you. We got fantastic specials for Christmas. You know that the end of the year is always our hardest month because I understand you're worried about Christmas or your family, what have you. So please consider gifts or please consider sending some donations or people our way. And we have great products for you and we have great solutions for you. 10% off North American Urban Spice, off the Living Clay, Perrier, silver lozenges, which really are great. Those silver lozenges are really good. Try those. Activated charcoal is now back. If you're a new customer, we have 10% off the first order. Don't forget about Grown by Nature. Don't forget about all your magnesium and, your potassium and your calcium, good sources of calcium for your overall health. Buy some toothpaste. I mean, all these things. You get them at the Power Mall. High quality supplements make powerful differences in your life. We have so many gifts for the holiday, for stocking stuffers. Don't forget the deodorant. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for all that you do, for your prayers and attention. And as long as you're there supporting us, we're here back supporting you with people like William Federer. Thank you. 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. ThePowerMall.com. Getting back to William, we kind of digressed a little bit, but really, this is really all the same thing. Looking back, you started this discussion, in the 1500s? And now we're 400 or 500 years past that. And you can see the fingerprints of some mission or some overarching agenda and progression of mankind. And you can also see the returning back. It's like a dog to his vomit, as the Bible says. You can also see that going on. And if we don't understand these events, if we don't understand the pilgrims and Thanksgiving and what that means, I mean, some people have said that Thanksgiving is really the only Christian holiday, truly Christian holiday in America. I don't know what you think, but let's get back to around Squanto and Thanksgiving and go from there.
Right. So another interesting thing is the pilgrims attempted communism. So background, it was a company colony. And the company bylaws said everybody had to own everything in common. During the Middle Ages, there were no companies. It was a sin to pay or receive interest. It was called usury. And so if you, there were no companies, there were guilds where you would have like this in club of shoe cobblers with 1,000 rules if you wanted to open up a shoe cobbler shop. There were some religious orders that would do some kind of endeavors, but there were no things that we would identify today as companies. And so if you wanted to do something big like sail around the world looking for spices or gold, you had to hit up some rich guy or a king to underwrite the whole thing. So, you know, Columbus had to hit up the king and queen of Spain. Walter Raleigh was a rich guy in England. He financed personally a Virginia colony. He named Virginia, Virginia, after the Virgin Queen Elizabeth. The name of his little settlement was called Roanoke, and it's 1584. But then the Spanish decided to attack England with their armada in 1588. And so basically, his little Roanoke colony was abandoned for several years. When they finally send a boat back over there, it's gone. It's a ghost settlement. And so he lost 30,000 pounds sterling personally on that attempt. And so nobody else, a rich person, wanted to attempt any new colonies. The first, what we would call company, was after the Reformation, and it was in England, and it was in the 1550s, and you had a bunch of adventurers, is what they called themselves, but that was the word for investor. But it was the Company of Merchant Adventurers, and they were going to go over to China by going north of Russia. And they have three boats. They all freeze in the ice. Two of the boats, every single person on board is frozen stiff. The third boat, a dog sled, came out from Russia and rescued them, and they took them to meet the Tsar. And so they changed the name of the company to the Muscovy Company, Tsar Ivan the Terrible. It really didn't make much money. But the big company was the Dutch East India Company. And this was around 1600, and anybody, not just a bunch of rich guys, anybody, baker, blacksmith, cook, could invest money in a ship going to Indonesia looking for nutmeg or spices, cinnamon. And when the ship came back to Holland, you would get paid a profit. If you wanted to sell your interest in the boat while it was at sea, you would go down to something called the Amsterdam Stock Exchange, the first ever stock exchange. And if the boat sank or was captured by Muslim pirates or something, that's when the Dutch invented insurance companies. Insurance companies came from the Dutch. The Dutch settled a colony in America called New Amsterdam, which eventually became New York. But they had a New Amsterdam Stock Exchange along the wall of the little settlement. And when the British took it over, that turned into Wall Street. And but again, this idea was common people could invest in these big endeavors, and then they would get a share of the profits that come in. And after starting the British East India Company, the British started another company called the Virginia Company. And a bunch of guys invested money. They tried to settle Jamestown, Virginia. They had malaria, disease, famine, Indian attacks. One winter, they had 500 people. By the end of the winter, they had 50. I mean, wow. They're just dying right and left. It turns so bad that finally the king has to take it over and make it a royal crown colony where the king is ruling this thing directly. This happened later in India, right? So for 100 years, the British East India Company controlled the entire nation of India. Finally, the people of India appealed to Queen Victoria and said, look, can we just deal with you directly instead of going through this company? You know, but so in Jamestown, they sent over a royal crown governor. There was a third type of company called a proprietary colony. So third type of colony. So you have company colonies, royal crown colonies, and proprietary colony. A proprietary colony is where the king gives the whole colony to a friend as his personal property. So William Penn got all of Pennsylvania as his personal property. He decided to do something good with it, a holy experiment to let all the persecuted peoples of Europe come and live together. Baltimore, Maryland, was originally personal property of Lord Baltimore of Maryland. And then the Carolinas were originally personal property of seven Lord proprietors. But back to Virginia Company went belly up. Now it's a Royal Crown Colony. But the Pilgrims' land. Now, the Pilgrims had a Plymouth Company, and they had bylaws. And the bylaws were written by some, you know, pencil pusher at some desk. And the bylaw says everything is owned in common for 7 years. Everything that was gained by trading with the Indians, fishing, you know, scavenging, everything would go into ye common pot and ye common store. And everyone would get their livelihood, their food, their clothes, and everything out of ye common stock. And then at the end of 7 years, what was left in ye common stock would be divided up equally amongst the planters and the adventurers, the investors over in England. Well, it worked for, they tried making it work for a couple of years, but the Pilgrims were starving. And nobody, William Bradford says, this communistic plan did not work because the older men thought it an indignity to be grouped together with these younger men and having to do the same kind of work that they do. The younger men considered it an injustice that they could do three times as much work as this old guy or, you know, a feeble guy, but they wouldn't get any more of the what came in. They said that the wives complained because they didn't want to wash some other men's clothes, and some husbands would not brook it, would not allow their wife to wash somebody else's underwear, right? And he said that because they were facing another winter, and they didn't want to starve, William Bradford said nobody wanted to go out and plant. My baby's sick. I can't plant today, you know. And so he said we had to come up with a fitter plan. And so he said it's not due to the people because these were good and godly people. They tried for several years to do, but he says it's this communistic plan itself. It just doesn't work. And so after much discussion, he says they gave every family a plot of land. And he says this made all hands more industrious, and everyone went out to work, and even the mothers would take their little kids with them, and they would go out and plant. Why? Because they got everything that came in. And he says this was done so that we wouldn't be, have to suffer want through another winter and die. And so here the Pilgrims experimented with communism. And it didn't work. Nobody was motivated to do anything more, and it caused a hatred amongst them because it destroyed, you know, respect for the older people and the ones that were more creative and so forth. But he says once they gave everybody their own property, they had an abundance of stuff, and that sort of led to these you know, these generous Thanksgiving feasts that we see. I sort of went past it pretty quick, but Squanto was their interpreter, and so he put them on good terms with the other Indian tribes. This was something that Jamestown did not experience. And so the first Thanksgiving, the Indians showed up with their deer, their turkey. The Pilgrims had their, you know, squash and their cranberry sauce. And so they ate all day and did foot races and all kinds of things. And then at the end of the day, the Indians rolled up in their blankets on the ground and went to sleep. And the next day, they woke up, and there they are. They have Thanksgiving for a second day. And at the end of the day, they roll up in their blankets and go to sleep, and they wake up, and there they are. And so they have Thanksgiving a third day. So the first Thanksgiving went on for 3 days. And then an interesting thing, that the chief of the Indians, Powhatan, he fell ill. And so one of the Pilgrim leaders, Edward Winslow, goes to doctor up the chief, and he recovers. And you think, well, that's really nice. Well, it was a little bit more than that, because in Indian culture, if you doctor a chief and the chief dies, you die. So,
he didn't know, but, did he know what responsibility he was taking on there?
after, but William Bradford did write about it, so he must have known. So it was a serious thing to say, hey, you know, kind of take a look at your chief. It's like, he better get better now. But that ended up with this first entire generation of peace between the Pilgrims and the Native Americans. And then you had, there's two threads that trace through history, greed and the gospel. You always have people motivated by the gospel, and they're the ones that have orphanages and medical clinics, dig wells in villages, you know, collect shoes and give them to poor people. And you always have, you know, the Salvation Army. Here's the biggest organization worldwide that feeds the poor, takes care of the sick, and they do this for everybody. They don't care if you're LGBT or not. The Salvation Army will take care of your needs. And that's why everyone's all upset at Chick-fil-A for pulling money from the Salvation Army, because they minister to everybody. So
that's a big mistake. That so people understand. I don't know if our audience knows that Chick-fil-A for years has been very pro Salvation Army. They've been pro family, and the LGBT community has been extremely critical of Chick-fil-A, and all it's done for Chick-fil-A is make them more popular and more money. And now as they go to Europe, they're starting to bend to get into different European markets. So I just want to give a little background so people I think that's a huge mistake that they're making. I don't know your thoughts.
No, it is. And the thing is, you can never appease the other side. It's a lust-driven agenda. And lust, by definition, the more you yield to it, the more it wants. So they did a bait and switch on us. So originally they said, look, we just want to have gay marriage. If two people love each other, and who cares what we do in our bedrooms? And then the Christian-type people are saying, okay, you can do that. No sooner does it pass than they make a beeline to the preschool and begin indoctrinating little kids and begin teaching them transgendered stuff and drag queen story hour. And it's like, whoa, if you would have told us that you were going to push this, we would have never voted for it. And now they've taken it under the previous president, where they've sent the Department of Justice in saying, if you don't embrace this agenda, we're going to prosecute you. They go to all the leaders in the military and says, look, if you don't embrace this brand new morality, we're kicking you out. And so it went from, look, I'm being nice and tolerant by letting you get married and letting you do what you want in your bedroom, and now you're in the driver's seat and you're being intolerant of me. They're not content with coming out of the closet. They want to shove you into it. And worse, they want to take your kids and have you be happy that they're taking their kids.
This is all connected to this whole discussion in the historical perspective to me. You mentioned communism and socialism, about private property. This incident certainly, most certainly influenced the founding fathers, this idea of life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, that property only has value when one of the people hold it and create value on an individual level, and that the action of self-interest. So by acting in your own self-interest, you actually raise the level and the value of property and the value of everything. That was a revolutionary concept.
Yeah, and that's where you get copyrights and patents for trademarks. This was a big deal to the founding fathers. So you could spend all night long in your barn creating a cotton gin or working on the telegraph. Robert Fulton inventing a steamboat. You would spend that time because you would benefit from it. And then you would create an industry. You'd be meeting a need. I mean, if you weren't meeting a need, nobody would buy it. It wouldn't be any help. But it unleashed human creativity. In communist countries or wherever there's a king or a dictator, you create something that's good, boom, they just take it.
Why would you create anything?
I was reading about one of these Japanese guys that invented Nintendo or one of those games. And he was real popular, but then they were switching to the video games. You know, he came out with the first goggles you put on, and you can see the 3D, sort of virtual reality. But they cut his funding, so he only did it in black and white. And at the show, people were doing it. This isn't any good. It's black and white. And he was so ashamed by it, he committed suicide. But he didn't have any When you're in a culture where you don't have ownership of it, they just take it away from you, and they have no
feelings of having to be in gratitude. You know, in Europe, you have kings that would bring a scientist on his staff to create something, and the scientist got a stipend, you know, got some money from the king. So he was sort of motivated to be creative. If he was creative enough, he more or less, you know, got a job for life. But nevertheless, in America, you got to own the invention. You got to own the copyright to the book or the dictionary or whatever it was. And so it unleashed this creativity that I can spend all this time, you know, creating a modem or a fax machine or something, spurring this technology. And anyway, I sort of got away from my thought I was going toward. So there's always two threads you trace through history, greed and the gospel. You always have people motivated by the gospel, and they're the ones that have orphanages, medical clinics, and give to the poor. You always have people motivated by greed, and they're the ones that take land from Indians, sell people into slavery, and vote for candidates they think will help their pocketbook, even though that candidate stands for, you know, immoral things. And so the two threads cut through the human heart. But you look back at history and say, well, this race is good and this race is bad. No. You got good people and bad people in that race, and good people and bad people in that race. It's a software problem, not a hardware problem. It's the thinking in the brain, not the color of the skin. And I tell people, we're spirit, mind, and body. And so your mind is like a super fancy computer. It's more than that, but it's at least that. And your body's like the computer case, which makes it silly for people to argue over what color computer cases are. Silvers are better than greens, better than, you know, yellows. Like, doesn't matter what color the computer case is. What matters is what software is running on the thing. What apps are on your phone, right? Not what color your phone is. And so it doesn't matter what color somebody's skin is. It's what thinking is going on. Is it gospel thinking? Love your enemies. Do good to them that hate you. You know, give. Be charitable. Or is it a selfish software program? You know, being a bully, you know, and subduing people and cutting off their heads and so forth. And so anyway, so you look back at history, you can see these two threads. You can see people that really are genuine, wanting to help the Native Americans. And then you see these traders that will sell them alcohol in exchange for stuff, knowing that they have a higher metabolism and it's going to immediately go into their system and go to their head, you know, and they'll get this immediate, you know, inebriation, but it'll be detrimental to the Native Americans as a whole. But it's like, I don't care. I'll give them the fire water just because I want to, you know. So you always have these two threads, greed and the gospel, good people wanting to help, and then, you know, greedy people wanting to take advantage of it. And
we have just a few minutes left, 3 or 4 minutes. It's been fantastic to talk with you. Your ability to go from different subjects and put a historical spin on it is really profound. And your website, American Minute, I highly, highly recommend it. Just quick hitting, provocative thoughts about different historical topics or what happened on this day. I mean, you're guaranteed to learn something. You're guaranteed to connect with something inside you, something part of our past, which is vitally important. I have been personally, the show has taken on the mantle or the direction that we need to emotionally connect to our inheritance and really the foundation of this country, because not because we prefer our ancestors, it's because they latched onto some eternal truth and some eternal platform that is the greatest form of government we have seen in at least millennium, and that will lead to our happiness, our benefit, our safety, our peace. That's what I believe. But now we're letting that go. So in the last 3 or 4 minutes, obviously you're concerned about politics and where we are and what have you. Just leave us with the last, what are the most important things on your mind or historical story or whatever? What do we need to know from William Federer as we go into the end of this year?
Oh, well, thank you. Well, my website, again, is AmericanMinute.com. The book I've primarily talked about today is The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. I did, by the way, do a book on the history of Santa Claus and all the Christmas traditions, if you want to do something in December. Giving it a broad picture, every generation in history has had crises. Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, bubonic plagues, you know, World War II. I mean, every generation. And if you people, you read the history, people respond three ways. One is they're part of the problem. Two is they ignore the problem. And three, they're part of the answer. And it's sort of like that God knows what era we're living in. He knows the crises, and he's sort of watching to see how we respond. You know, God knew what was in Abraham's heart, but he wanted to see him take his son to the top of Mount Moriah and be willing to kill him. There's something about God knows your heart, but he wants to see you do something. He wants, right? So, and so we have an opportunity. So the crisis in every generation is sort of the catalyst. You know, in freshman chemistry, you would have this little beaker and, you know, would have a solution, but you'd put in another chemical and it would be a catalyst and it would cause a chemical reaction. And you would have some things precipitating and getting heavy and falling to the bottom of the beaker. And other things would turn into little bubbles and float to the top. But it didn't happen. And you didn't see it until this catalyst was put in there. It's like the crisis of each generation allows us to show the Lord and the world what we're made of. And I heard somebody say there's three groups of people, those that make things happen, those that watch things happen, and those that wonder what happened. And we want to be those that make things happen for good.
Oh, fantastic. There's the music. Dr. Federer, William Federer, it's fantastic. AmericanMinute.com is your website. The treacherous world of the 16th century. What a tale. What a great story. And the other books there at your website, we highly recommend. God bless you, and we'll talk to you soon. Maybe we'll have you on for Christmas. That'd be great.
We'll look forward to it.
All right, God bless you. There he goes. The end of the week, Rob Kirby's going to be here. I haven't had Rob on in a long time. I don't think I've ever interviewed Rob. We're excited to have Rob on and get an overview of really some major, major things going on in the economy. And he's world class. Love to talk to him. So you guys have a great evening. Remember who you are. It's an identity crisis. God bless you. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intended you.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease, it's just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.